This call is being recorded.
Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America, and we are so happy you could join us today. And we will begin with our morning prayer. Lawrence.
Page 147 of Miscellany. May this little sanctum be preserved sacred to the memory of this pure purpose and subserve it. Let the Bible and the Christian Science textbook preach the gospel which heals the sick and enlighten the people's science sense of Christian Science. This ministry, reaching the physical, moral, and spiritual needs of humanity, will in the name of Almighty God speak the truth that today, as in olden time, is found able to heal both sin and disease. Mary Baker Eddy.
Beautiful. Thank you. Okay, we'll start with our watching point. This is a book by Gilbert Carpenter entitled 500 Watching Points. And each week we have a different one to study.
Watch number 107. Watch lest you permit a human estimate or attitude to blind you to the true and divine significance of your human experiences. This is an important point, since it is your attitude towards anything that determines how it will affect your progress. A postman who complains and grumbles about the long distances he has to walk gets no benefit from the walking. But if he regards it as training for a marathon, he will rejoice in it and thus profit by it. It is our attitude toward every experience that matters. If we whine, complain, or wonder why God is picking on us when we get into hot or cold water, then we will get little spiritual growth. Once a man was thrown into a pit. Instead of becoming angry when people threw stones at him, he used the stones to build steps on which he climbed up to freedom. What would be of value of a consciousness of God and the understanding of Christian Science that had not been toughened and strengthened so that it can endure to the end? When one has the right attitude toward human persecution and affliction, he will never be ashamed of his problems, nor will he personalize the channels through which such experiences come to him. Rather, will he rejoice in whatever plunges him into a hot or cold experience. He will perceive that it is love's plan and truth's way of training him to endure. A prospective aviator is put through grueling tests to develop and test his stamina. Love knows that we need to be trained for our spiritual flights, and it provides tests for the pilgrim all along the way. End quote.
Thank you. Comments on that?
I think this is a brilliant watching point. And everybody can benefit from it. Everybody.
Yeah, because it turns the hard experiences, the hardships we have, into something good. As was brought out, you're thrown into a pit where you get stones and climb out. Whatever hardship comes your way, you can turn it to gold, as I say. You can make it something good, because everything that comes to us for a lesson, comes to us to teach us something. And if you listen, you'll learn. And once you learn the lesson, the problem will disappear. And I can say this as a fact, because I've experienced it not just once, but over and over and over again.
I also think that teaching here that said, whatever happens, you can say, this too will bless me. I feel that using that, the initial thought process is to the positive. If I say this too can bless me instead of, oh my God, what, oh, you know, that kind of reaction. So it's always the attitude first, which sends you to the better or the wrong altitude of thinking.
Thank you. That's why your attitude is so important. As you said, if you grumble and mumble, you're not helping any, you're not helping yourself. But if you just see it as, well, what lessons here can I learn to get me closer to God? Because that's always the objective, to find out about this God that loves us. So in our subject, our lesson today, truth, we will be talking about this truth that's ever with us and the lessons that it teaches us. So, yes, subject truth, Golden Text, Psalm 86. Did you read it, Jeffrey?
Teach me thy way, O Lord. I will walk in thy truth.
Thank you. And then, you know, it goes on in this lesson in Deuteronomy. Give ear, O ye heavens, and I will speak, and hear, O earth, the words of my mouth. My doctrine shall drop as the rain, my speech shall distill as the dew, as the small rain upon the tender herb, and the showers upon the grass. God is always talking to us, and what is so wonderful here, he's always teaching us. As we always talk about teachers and wanting to get a great teacher, well, we have the greatest teacher there could be if we would listen and learn the lessons that he brings to us. And then on the next page in John, then said Jesus unto them, when ye have lifted up the Son of Man, then shall ye know that I am he, and that I do nothing of myself, but as my Father hath taught me, I speak these things. He learned everything from his Father. And that's a good way to refer to God as your Father, a loving Father who is teaching you. So the greatest man that ever lived was taught by God. God was real to him. He wasn't some airy-fairy thing out there. And he was his teacher. So think about things you might want to learn and realize it's God who can teach you. Sometimes God will direct you to a teacher or to someone else to help you, but always, always seek him first. I told Gary recently, and I was half joking, but I said, we were on our way to church, and I said, you know, and it was the beginning of the year when everyone's having all these New Year's resolutions, and I kind of laugh at that, you know, new year, new you, all that stuff. Anyway, so I told Gary I had a personal trainer, and he looked at me like I was crazy because he knows I'm like the least athletic person in the world. And he said, oh, really? So I said, yes, and it's God. And that might sound like a little strange, but I thought about it, and I thought, well, you know, why turn to all these other things when God is my everything, and he can teach me what I need to do. And in my case, you know, it might be just taking a walk, but why not let God be your everything? Let him teach all things to you. And of course, the main thing that he teaches and the most important thing is the unreality of sin, disease, and death, which is how Christ Jesus was taught. And remember, Christ Jesus did not go to any schools. He didn't have any degrees. He was taught of the Father, and he was the greatest man that ever lived. And what we have here in science, we are just barely scratching the surface of how absolutely tremendous it is. It's the only thing that will truly bring in the millennium, spiritualize thought. We had an interesting email this week. I'll let Gary briefly tell you about it.
From a professor at City University of New York who specializes, I guess, in the early history of the Christian Science movement. I suspect he's probably a student of Christian Science himself, but he's written articles about, you know, the early days of Christian Science. And he's been trying to get information about Herbert Eustace. And
who was
one of the three original trustees of the publishing trust, which Mrs. Eddy set up as an independent trust to do all the publishing, the magazines and stuff, and the books, and was the trustee of that publishing when the board of directors, you know, sued them and tried to take them over, and eventually took them over. And so he and the other trustees were eventually excommunicated from the church and all that nonsense. But he wrote the book that we publish and sell, Christian Science, It's Clear, Correct Teaching. He's written a lot of other things. And he taught around the country for decades after he was excommunicated. He was a beloved practitioner and teacher. And he lived until the 1950s. And he set up a trust that carried on the publishing and the disseminating of his book. And the trust that he set up recently disbanded a few years ago, and the trustees of that trust asked us to take it over, which we did happily. So we now have all the books that they had published, and we're in the process of reprinting it ourselves because we're going to run out in a year or two. But anyway, so he's been trying to get information about Eustace, and he found our website, quite a while ago, and has been following us, and said, you know, he's looking for a picture of Eustace. You know, could we help
him? Which we have.
He's writing an article now that's going to come out later this year about Eustace and two or three other people. I guess the other trustees of the publishing trust. So Linda fortunately came up with a whole list of websites that have information on Herbert Eustace, several of which are Carol Cogswell's website. Because Carol has dedicated her life to disseminating information about Herbert Eustace, and she buys boxes of our books, you know, every once in a while, and sells them through her websites. So I directed him to all these websites, and wished him well in his search for the truth, and he's been emailing back and forth, with having some interesting conversations back and forth. But anyway, he's pursuing the truth about the early history of the Christian Science movement, and has been pursuing that for quite some time. So we're hoping that, and he, in his, one of his most recent emails, he was saying that about our church and the email and the website and how we have a lot of people attending our services, on tables and our Bible studies online and through our teleconference, and that people are being healed. Our practitioners are extremely busy. He needed to know that, in contrast to whatever else he might have been exposed to. And so he wrote that a friend of his, who's apparently a corporate executive, but not a Christian Scientist, told him that the world may now be ready for acceptance, broad acceptance of Christian Science. So I responded, well, and why not? You know, Albert Einstein referred to it as the ultimate science. And even though mankind may be slow to accept the truth, it is inevitable. And since it is the ultimate truth about all things, it is inevitable that the world, mankind, finally, someday, you know, see it clearly for what it is, and that we are expecting that. So anyway, so we're looking forward to his article being published later this year.
Yeah, it was good to hear from him, and all kinds of things keep happening, and I feel too we're on the verge of a breakthrough. And as we know, Christian Science is not New Age. New Age has gotten vastly popular, and it had its roots in science, but people who turned away from Mrs. Eddy and wanted to make it more
personal, human.
Yeah, they humanized it. They took the commandments and the Sermon on the Mount out of it, and what gives it the moral thrust that is so important. So science is the ultimate, and it will be acknowledged sooner.
So something interesting about Carol Cogswell is that she was never a member of the Boston Church. So she feels like she's a Christian Scientist, yet never joined the Boston Church or any branch church.
Carol Cogswell.
Her understanding of Christian Science comes from, I'm not sure if it was Herbert Eustace directly or someone that he taught, but anyway, the Christian Science from Herbert Eustace.
Yeah. Right. Her teacher was a student of Herbert Eustace.
Okay, that's kind of what I thought. Okay, so I find it fascinating that she feels as a Christian Scientist, but never had anything whatsoever to do with the Boston Church or any of the branch churches.
Thank you. And I know even in our early conversation with her, she was a little skeptical of us. So when you get burned like that, you tend to be that way. So did you want to say something, Melissa?
I was going to tie in your reading from the Bible to the watch and your comment. When we talk about the stones coming in, these are stones that can hurt us, but it really is the Father that's guiding the person in the pit to how to put the stones and to arrange them to get out of the hole. So
thank you.
Tying that to the Bible section.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. The rock.
While we're talking about that, and before we get into the lesson, there's so many things I have to say today. Most of you know this thing, this contagious belief that's going around right now. It's all over the news. And we will, on Thursday, have a watch on it, all things being equal. As a watch is what we pray about certain situations. But, of course, you all should be working now with it. And you can all turn to Mrs. Eddy's article, Contagion and Miscellaneous Writings, on page 228. And she says, if only the people would believe that good is more contagious than evil, since God is omnipresence, how much more certain would be the doctor's success and the clergyman's conversion of sinners. She goes on very specifically in handling contagious beliefs. And it's very important that you submerge yourself in this truth, because the world is telling you everything else. It's telling you, and it's coming, and then, you know, you see everyone walking around with masks on their face. Well, not everyone, but at airports and things. And I thought it was very interesting. Candy in Wisconsin, she put this on a bulletin board, but it was something she just turned to one morning when this was going around, and it's in Teaching and Addresses by Kimball. And I honestly don't remember reading it, although I'm sure I have, but the title of this is Microbes, Germs, Bacilli, Rats, Insects, Pests. And then Kimball says, declare the usefulness of all God's created ideas, and further declare that none of these ideas desire to harm or destroy your house, goods, or flesh. This demesmerizes the insect or the animal or the germ or whatever you want to call it. God does not kill. Love does not kill. And then he gives an illustration. Worms on vines. complaint made, and I declared the usefulness and harmlessness of all God's ideas. The worms departed, and I do not know where. So this is an ongoing treatment that we give to render Genesis 1, when God saw everything, and behold,
it was very good.
Very good. Because when we start to accept things as not being very good, it's a mesmeric suggestion. And just as Mrs. Eddy says that Daniel in the lion's den, that Daniel felt the control that love held over all. She doesn't say some things. This doesn't say some things. It doesn't say in Genesis that some things were very good. Everything he saw was very good. Everything he created was very good. It is our human beliefs and fears and negativities that seem to bring out this other result. And we have the dominion with it in us to prove it to be false. And I know our watchers here, Jeremy, what have you said about the watches?
Oh, just how much peace I've gotten, how anything that I feel fear about, I do a watch and I get peace, and it's just been wonderful. And then with time, I've seen things that we've watched about have become nothing.
Yeah, you don't hear about. You hear it, oh my goodness, there was some, I can't even think of the names of all these things that were going on, and then suddenly you don't hear about it anymore.
And the one I go to is, I think it was back in 2014, actually. Everyone was sure that we were going to go to war with Syria, and we did a watch, and I never heard anything on the news about it again. So
remember that this is the work, the undercurrent, whatever you want to call it. It goes on quietly and silently, working, chipping away, bit by bit, day by day. As I think it was Karen read that about the snow, snowflakes covering the earth, purifying the earth. Mrs. Eddy wrote that, and she quoted from that. But this is what we do. And the results, things are going on that we don't even know about. Off through dangers, oft unknown, as the hymn says. But it's working silently. Florence?
Yeah, I just saw something this morning in the Blue Book. I don't remember the page, but it said, truth, life, and love never lose their claim on us. I thought that was just so beautiful.
Thank you. He claims us as his own. Now, there was some... Go ahead, Karen.
The other... I just wanted to add to that sentence that you reminded me that I said last week, but also she says we must remember that the smallest truth is mightier than the greatest lie the world has ever known. That helps me too a lot.
It's beautiful. Yes. Yes.
That's good, because the biggest lies can sometimes be mesmeric, can't they? They can sometimes appear to be, you know, overwhelming, powerful. But the smallest truth has more power than any of those lies. That's good. Thank you.
And then these are some things I read in a newspaper. I consider these signs of the times, although some of them, first one is from Hippocrates, who was what, the author of medicine. But this is a quote. It is more important to know what sort of person has a disease than to know what sort of disease the person has. Because again, our thinking determines our life and also the health of our body. And when we think, it's not just a matter of positive thinking over, you know, mind over matter. No, no, no. This is God's dominion over all. And ultimately, we prove the nothingness of matter, as Einstein did, as well as Mrs. Eddy. And this was another, and I know this is what, in the practice, what we find. I found it in my own life as well. This is a quote from a Dr. David Hanscom, renowned spine surgeon at Swedish Medical Center in Seattle. He says, chronic anxiety and anger are the root cause of nearly all chronic pain cases. when you hold in your heart this carnal mind thinking, and many times it's not intentional, you're just continually anxious or continually even hateful, resentful, fearful, negative, then it seems to affect the body in some way and come out as pain, because your thought is painful, your body becomes painful. You get rid of, and he, this doctor in this article, is a big long article, said they've had huge results in curing people of chronic pain in this way. And this is a leaven of truth. Now, but, and I will say this is a big but, Mrs. Eddy in the article, body says that the negative, fearful, anxious feeling of the carnal mind is no more true than the physical manifestation. It's all mesmerism, all a lie. It's all claiming that there's a power apart from God and that you are somewhere just floating around out there without your father, which is never true. It's never true. It's just a false concept of what is true. And then the last one, and I burst out laughing at this, almost everything will work again if you unplug it for a few minutes. including you. Including you. And I laugh because every time I have a problem with my computer or my Roku, or I tell Jeremy to come over and he unplugs it for 30 seconds.
And it
comes back on. So remember, including you, sometimes you have to unplug yourself from the intensity of whatever's wrong or whatever's bugging you. Just chill out. Just let it be.
Disconnect, right?
Disconnect. Cut out those arguments. And
that's why your body feels pain. Because it's your body telling you, cut it out.
Yeah, it's saying stop it. Stop. So it's actually a good thing. And this is part of the teaching experience, the listening experience. When your body, I always ask my body if it's giving me trouble, what am I doing? And I always can tell. I've been depressed. I've been pushing myself. I've been anxious about something. And I get to that. And I get my peace back. And my body, it's like a ball that gets squeezed. It just bounces back. This is Eddie, and this is a paraphrase. The recuperative action of the system goes on naturally when sustained by truth. Your body naturally recovers. The doctors are amazed at how people recover. Don't ever forget that. Learn lessons. God teaches us in many ways, certainly with our body. Sometimes you have a bad experience. What is there? Do you need to love more? Do you find somebody that's just been real ugly to you? Do you need, what do you need to learn about this? He's always teaching the lessons, and they're life lessons.
If we will listen.
We listen. And this is the truth.
Obey.
Listen and obey.
But everything we talked about, excuse me, we have the choice what we do with it. I thought even the whole lesson, we have the choice.
Right. We have the choice. Especially when you start out, you have the choice. After a point, you feel you don't have a choice. You know what will happen if you don't obey. Okay, we were going to go to the forum, which is what we have on our website, which everyone, or not everyone, some people contribute things. And so, Jeremy, you start with yours.
Okay. Well, the Deuteronomy 32:4, he is the rock, his work is perfect, for all his ways are judgment. A God of truth and without iniquity, just and right is he. That really stuck out to me this week. It took me a while to finally get the words, because I just got them last night. But yeah, for all his ways are judgment. I was just thinking how I found that when being here, because before coming here, I didn't really know what was right or wrong, how to judge situations. But knowing that God is truth, life, and love, and everything he does is obviously has those qualities. So... So I just came up with some questions came that when answering them, let me know that I got closer. I don't know. Do you want me to read those questions?
Well, if you can, yeah, if you or summarize it a little bit. Okay. First is truth being revealed.
Yeah, just can I see that in the course of my life? Am I moving away from false beliefs towards truth, and understanding that truth is really out there, and that that is God. And
well, and I like what you said, is the need for empty calories, empty words, empty interactions, vain imaginings going away and being replaced with the need for healing, comfort, and peace that only Christian Science brings. Because, you know, this emptiness, if something isn't of value in your life, and that includes so-called friends or things you do, if when you do it, you come away feeling empty or worse than empty, then why do it? Don't do it. Unplug from that.
And I know I found previously that myself and others, when not knowing that God is out there, when life feels awful, they just want to get away from it. They want to escape from it. So that's where all that stuff came in to begin with. So I'm glad not to need it anymore to know that life can have meaning and it doesn't require nonsense.
Escapism. Well, and it's true. You want to get away. It's escapism. And people get away through drugs and alcohol and constant amusement. But that longing for life with a capital L is always there in our hearts. And that's why it's there, to turn us to true truth with a capital T, life, and not to fill it with emptiness. Okay, the next.
And then, is love being demonstrated? And I know perfect love casteth out fear. So that just had me thinking, is fear lessening? And is joy increasing? Is my life blessing more than just me? Am I moving beyond selfish concern and seeking the good of all mankind? And then, is life being expressed? Do I accept the claims of sickness? Or do I, quote, rise in rebellion against them, unquote, from Science and Health? Do I see and feel the beauty of God's creation evident all around me? Do I feel drained by this work or invigorated by it? Am I grateful to get up each day and live for God? Most definitely.
And Jeremy is our computer guy. And it was so sweet because at our membership meeting, Sherry from California said that her husband had looked at our website and thought we were a mega church. He thought we had thousands of people here. And when Sherry said no, and actually most of this is done, Jeremy and Linda now helping. And then, of course, all of us who every time you speak or say things, it gets added to the website, makes it what it is. But I never thought about that before. To an outsider, our website looks, whoa. And then you come here and there's just only a few people.
Glass is just normal.
I know. This is what we do. But also, we are so dedicated to it, and we know emphatically that it is God that's doing it. It's not us, because if we didn't know that, we would all be exhausted, and it would be an impossible achievement. But we know it's God, and it takes on a life of itself. It's God working. So I was very grateful for that, those remarks. Okay, now Florence, you wrote some beautiful things on this topic.
Oh, I just love what Jeremy, the quote, that he is the rock, his work is perfect. I think when we take that premise as my thinking, then it gives me a whole lot of questions to ask myself. And when I do ask myself those questions, then the ridiculousness of the claims becomes so clear. As you said, you were about to laugh at some point. It makes, what am I thinking? So some of the questions that I've had to ask is, could God send me fear, pain, discomfort, distress? But the promise in 1 John 4 says that God is love, so that's impossible. Is God all-powerful only today? And I ask this one because sometimes myself, as well as others who call, they're worried about something the next month, next week. I mean, Is he only here today and not then? Or is he only powerful only today? Powerful all the time. God is omnipotent. Isaiah 45, 5 and Science and Health, page 465 tells us so. And as far as, you know, the future worries and so on, it says that in Matthew 28, it says, "Lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of time or of the world," I think. And does he not have the best plan for my life? This used to be the most troublesome for me. What am I going to do? You know, am I doing this right? All kinds of indecisions. Well, God is omniscient. And he knows everything. He is a planner, absolutely perfect planner. And in Revelations 3:8, he says, "Behold, I have set before thee an open door, and no man can shut it." This quote really helped me once when I was really worried about what was going to happen in the future. And then, how can I lack anything good? Well, it says, Psalm 84, he will not withhold any good thing. And in science, we learn that he is our inexhaustible source. So I found that these questions really do help me calm and wipe out. They do wipe out the lies that try to challenge. If I practice or use the antidotes, these antidotes of truth, and it's just been very beautiful, the actual consistent practice of these things. And lastly, it says in page 224, Science and Health, no power can withstand divine love. I mean, how great is that, and how comforting.
That's beautiful. So beautiful. And this is how we work. This is why we study. You get these fearful, negative, oppressive suggestions. Well, what does God say about it? What's God telling you about it? And that's just what Florence did in each one of these cases. What is God saying? And God always tells us its answers of love and peace. And I love that one about the door is open, no man can shut it. God's plan for you, nothing can oppose that. It might pop up and seem like horrible apparitions of how it's going to stop you. But if you see it as powerful apparitions that are trying to stop you, and you know, well, if this is God's plan, nothing can stop you. That door will open. It'll swing open right when you think you're cooked, right when you think there's no escaping it, that the sword's over your neck. Door will open and you'll go through.
I think we can remember that truth is invincible. I think, you know, really our own appreciation of this power at hand, that's what helps us. So.
Yes.
Thank you, Florence. And you know, the wonderful thing is, truth just is. Whatever is true is true. It's not like we have to make it up. And whatever is true is what created us. And it's good, it's love, it's life, it's everything that's good. So it's our divine right not to accept anything else. And it's not like we have to go, you know, make anything up. The truth is truth. Our challenge is to listen and find it and see it more clearly.
And obey it.
And obey it.
Now, along the lines of God being our teacher, it was interesting because on the bulletin board, Barbara posted something in the blue book on page 114 about Ralph Waldo Emerson. And it was a story. You know, it's amazing. Mrs. Eddy lived, Ralph Waldo Emerson, Walt Whitman, Henry David Thoreau, John Greenleaf Whittier, Bronson Alcott. She lived in a time where there were all these great thinkers and writers. Of course, she was the greatest of them all.
And she knew many of them.
She knew many of them. Bronson Alcott, she healed. And that's Louisa May Alcott's father. That movie Little Women is out now. And that was one of my favorite books as a child. Teaches many lessons on morality and what makes a person happy, as did all, I thought, Louisa May Alcott's books. She healed Bronson Alcott, and he was a big supporter of her and of her textbook when no one else had the guts to stand up for her radical ideas. She also, I believe it was John Greenleaf Whittier also that she healed.
Yep.
And his beautiful poems are in our hymnal. He's one of my favorite poets. Number 49, take from us now the strain and stress, and let our ordered lives confess the beauty of thy peace. Well, she healed him. But she talks about Ralph Waldo Emerson. She goes in, because he's quite ill, to heal him, and he would have none of it. And she said she went into the recesses of his thought and realized he was unhealable. And he told her outright that, I'm getting old, and this is how it is, and that's it, and this is how God wants it to be. So her point was, and I do feel in reading some of his quotes, he did say some good things, but to study his works, when that is the thought behind his works, well, why would you do that when there are so many other great things to study and read, like our early workers, the books that are on our website, people who actually were taught by Mrs. Eddy. So her point was to her student, why would you study someone who this was behind it, that God is not all powerful, that God wants us to get old and sick and die? I mean, why study that? And you can ask yourself when you read books, is this helping me, enlightening me, making me feel better or not? And even sometimes when the words are good, if the thought behind the words is in Ralph Waldo Emerson, maybe we shouldn't be reading it, wasting time that would be much better spent. I feel that way too about artwork. Why do you want to look? I never got Van Gogh. Excuse me if I'm stepping on any toes, but it looks horrible. Or some of these abstract, horrible paintings, it makes me feel terrible. Why do I want that in my home? Or why would I want to look at it? Music too. Unless it inspires you, then. Oh, now I will go into the Bible story of the fiery furnace, and I'll have Gary read what Parthen said, because it's a very different thought about it and very interesting and good.
Okay, Parthen says, he quotes, King Nebuchadnezzar answered and said, "Lo, I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire. And they have no hurt. And the form of the fourth is like the Son of God." Daniel 3, end quote. Quote from Miscellaneous Writings. Christian Science translates mind, God, to mortals. It is the infinite calculus defining the line, plane, space, and fourth dimension of spirit. End quote. Mary Baker Eddy. The mightiest men of Babylon were roasted alive as they threw the three Hebrew children into the fiery furnace. The unharmed children suddenly discovered they had not entered into a space defined by standards of mortal length, breadth, depth. Instead, they entered the fourth dimension beyond the jarring testimony of the three-dimensional world. And the form of the fourth dimensional being that unbound them and walked among them was the Son of God. This incident changed a whole nation, a whole empire, in fact. Note that King Nebuchadnezzar did not simply say, quote, "I now warmly welcome the worship of the God of Israel into the pantheon of all religions of the world so that we can all live in harmony with one another," end quote. No. The king's decree was absolute. No one should worship or serve any other god but the God of the three Hebrew children. King Nebuchadnezzar's absolutism runs parallel to that of John Adams. Quote, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. it is wholly inadequate to the government of any other, end quote. And Mrs. Eddy was equally absolutist, quote, the thunder of Sinai, the Ten Commandments, and the Sermon on the Mount are pursuing and will overtake the ages, rebuking in their course all error and proclaiming the kingdom of heaven on earth, end quote. Science and Health, page 174.
So you see, that's how they escaped the fire. Their thought was so spiritualized through their obedience to God, not bowing to the false gods, that they were totally protected. And I was thinking later, you know, about Luann. Is Luann on?
Yes.
Where she, you know, she'd grown up in a terribly abusive home. But at times, right, she felt like she was retreating to this
other dimension.
Yeah, this other dimension, this beautiful place where no one could reach her, no physical or mental or emotional abuse could touch her. Right, Luann?
Yes, that is true. There's a lot of times that I just find myself in places that were not, like I'd be in my bedroom, but I'd be in an open field with a lot of flowers and things like that, that would just really take me right out of the situation. And then after, when I would return to my room, whatever was happening would be over. Like it never touched me because I was in that field. I was away with things that I really enjoy and things that touched me. So there was a lot of times like that I was able to just really shut everything out and allow it to just take me away and take me out of the situation.
And that was God's care for you.
That was God's care. And he continued to care for you until, you know, you found your way here to total freedom and found that place. You know, it is true. We either make hell on earth or we have heaven on earth according to the thoughts we entertain and our love and obedience to God. Now, Nancy, you wrote something beautiful from James. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. And what did you say about that?
Well, I love thinking about God as the Father of lights shining in us. And I read, ordinary heavenly lights produce shadows. They wax and wane. They shift and fade. And even the sun is occasionally eclipsed. But God's light is unchanging. It is not subject to variation. God's light cannot be overshadowed. And how comforting it is to know that God is a constant, immutable, ever-present source of all good, life, wisdom, purity, health, and happiness. And what struck me most is that this truth has always been, it is now, and it forever will be. And that this can never change.
That's beautiful. Very beautiful. Thank you. And that is the truth. You know, sometimes we can't see the sun. It's behind the cloud. That simple truth. That doesn't mean it's not shining. It is shining. Something has misted our vision of it. But it is there. And we must never doubt that.
And we can't physically see God. We can't physically touch God. But we can feel his presence. Sometimes we just have to look harder.
Yeah, and we should, because he's omnipresent and omniscience and omnipotence. He is everywhere. And as we grow in the science, we begin to see him everywhere, even in situations where he doesn't appear to be. We know he is actually right there. And in knowing that, whatever seems obscure or wrong or unjust goes, it disappears. Again, God teaching us lessons, life lessons, if we listen.
And that's why our testimony meetings every Wednesday are so important, because they show that even in a difficult situation or in a life-threatening situation, God was there caring for us. And that's why, you know, Paul said, you know, he said something like, you know, he loved infirmities. Because they pushed him to God. And that's what they do for us. You got a problem? Well, seek God a little bit more. You know, Mrs. Eddy says strive. You don't just waltz, you know, to the presence of God. Sometimes you have to work. Sometimes you have to work for it. And that's what problems do for us. They push us to God. And that's a good thing.
And this is so wondrous, and so many people don't know this, and that's why it's like a secret weapon, if you will. Secret because the world doesn't know it, and weapon because it is a sword that protects and guides and guards and governs. And I did love also what Linda wrote, and we will end on miscellaneous writings. The Man of Integrity on page 147, which has to do with truth and learning from our teacher, God.
The man of integrity is one who makes it his constant rule to follow the road of duty, according as truth and the voice of his conscience pointed out to him. He is not guided merely by affections, which may sometime give the color of virtue to a loose and unstable character. The upright man is guided by a fixed principle, which destines him to do nothing but what is honorable, and to abhor whatever is base or unworthy. Hence, we find him ever the same, at all times the trusty friend, the affectionate relative, the conscientious man of business, the pious worker, the public-spirited citizen. He assumes no borrowed appearances. He seeks no mask to cover him, for he acts no studied part. But he is indeed what he appears to be, full of truth, candor, and humanity. In all his pursuits, he knows no path but the fair, open, and direct one, and would much rather fail of success than attain it by reproachable means. He never shows us a smiling countenance while he meditates evil against us in his heart. We shall never find one part of his character at variance with another. Mary Baker Eddy.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.